Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion. At the 12th hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is October the 3rd, 2024. It is Rule 1, 2028. This is our third service on this new moon Sabbath. And we're going to take it from 13 symbolic codes. Number 3 and 4. It's entitled The Latter Day Confederacy. It says, well, this study was given by the Vicky Hart up September 30th, 1939, and June 22nd, 1940. It says, through the prophecy of Isaiah 7 and 8, we plainly see that the Yahweh's people are approaching a time that will demand of them great faith to believe implicitly in the Yahweh's word only. Since the experiences which are recorded in the Bible were written, whether in samples or objects, lessons for the Yahweh's people today, 1 Corinthians 10:11. Let us read a few verses from Isaiah 7 and then Isaiah 8 and glean the lesson there may be hidden there for us. Isaiah 7:1. And it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of the Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. For this verse, in the conjunction with the verses which follow, it revealed that Yahweh favored Judah, the two-tribe kingdom, even though at the same time Ephraim, the ten-tribe kingdom, were also his people. For the reason he favored Judah in this instance was that their brethren Ephraim had joined the heathen forces to fight against Judah. Therefore, Yahweh could not bless Ephraim's endeavor. Through this experience, we should gain the lesson, as the apostolic and typical apostolic believers, that Yahweh will not bless the endeavors of any of his people when they join heathen forces in order to gain strength in their effort to overcome their brethren and the Yasir, whom for some reason they wish to have put out of their way. Such an alliance shall not prosper. Isaiah 7 here. And it was told the house of David, saying, Syria, his confederate with Ephraim, and his heart was moved, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. For the people of the Judah were afraid. How would we feel if a like experience should befall us now? What would sustain us through it? For the Yahshua again would be the only hope of his people. Isaiah 7, 3-9. Then said the Yahshua unto Isaiah, go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou and Shur Jashub, thy son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool, and the highway of the fuller's field, and say unto him, take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither be faint-hearted. For the two tails of these smoking firebrands were the fierce anger of the risen with Syria and of the son of Ramaliah, because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Ramaliah have taken evil counsel against thee, saying, let us go up against Judah and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, and set a king in the midst of it, even the son of Tabeel. Thus saith the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, it shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is risen, and within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken, that it be not a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Ramaliah's son. If you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. For the Yahweh was here telling Judah that they should not fear this alliance, because it was not he was not sponsoring it. Israel and Syria were the dependent on nothing greater than their king and the capitals of their nation. Judah was instructed to depend on the Yahweh's word, which declared that these allied powers would fail to overcome them. Moreover, Judah was told, if you will not really believe, surely you shall not be established. In other words, Judah was told that if they did not believe what the Yahweh was telling them, they would lose out. Their survival, therefore, was wholly conditional on their complete belief in the Yahweh's promise only that the alliance formed against them would fail. The day is coming when you and I, too, must depend entirely on the Yahweh's word, but unless we know what Yahweh's word is, it is impossible for us to believe him. Isaiah 6:9. Associate yourselves, O ye people, and you shall be broken in pieces, and give ear, all ye of the far countries. Gird yourselves, and you shall be broken in pieces. Gird yourselves, and you shall be broken in pieces. But Yahweh here is challenging a move toward a federation of nations. With World War I, we began to hear serious proposals for the association of nations into a single league. Today, the proposal is revived, and efforts are being made toward forming a strong and a workable union of nations. Indeed, not only is the idea of the International Federation growing more and more prevalent, but in the minds of the many great men, there is the positive conviction that the successful continuance of the nation's way of life is utterly dependent upon the closest association and cooperation of all those nations which share their way of the life. For the warning given unto this chapter to nations and people is not to associate and gird themselves or take counsel together, as it would only come to naught. There may be some significance in the repetitions of the warning. If so, it would indicate that either two or possibly three attempts would be made among nations. To associate and judge themselves, and it would only end in a complete failure. If there should yet be another attempt, and there be involved a war against Judah, the Judah having no adequate means of the defense among themselves, will have to let Yahweh be, let the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, be their means of deliverance. Well, that's what we got going on right now in Jerusalem. Yahshua is there over there right now, the son of Yahweh, and he's the one that's defending and leading the way for Judah. That is, Israel being vexed today. He's defeating the enemy around him. Isaiah 8:10. Take counsel together, and it shall come to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand, for Yahweh is with us. For Yahweh's people take a strong and independent attitude. For the Yahweh's people will take a strong and independent attitude because they believe that the Yahweh is with them. Most human beings are somewhat like Peter. We have great faith until we meet face to face a trial, when the trial here prophesied comes, though the Yahshua's people must know that the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, is with them, and they must firmly stand on his side through this verse. We are made to understand the real reason for the certain failure of the nation and their attempt to obviate the fulfillment of their fears. For Yahweh is not with them. It becomes distinctly apparent, therefore, that it is the pressing duty of every Yahweh-fearing country and individual sincerity to seek Yahweh's will and be with Him if we are to survive and prosper. Let's read that again. That it is the pressing duty of every Yahweh-fearing country and individual sincerity to seek the Yahweh's will and be with Him if we are to survive and prosper. Isaiah 8:11-12. For the Yahshua spake thus unto me with a strong hand, and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, Say ye not a confederacy unto all them unto whom this people shall say a confederacy. Now that fear ye their fear, nor be afraid, for the Yahweh's people, for the Yahshua's people, son of Yahweh, are not only commanded not to participate in the confederacy, but they are to oppose it unto all them unto whom this people shall say a confederacy. Now that fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. It is upon the root of some fear that the confederacy is formed. But that which constitutes the fear is not to constitute the fear of the Yahweh's people. Isaiah 8:13. Sanctify the Yahshua of the host, the son of Yahweh, himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. For the Yahshua alone is to be reverenced. for the Yeshua longer to be feared and not dreaded. If there were no possibility for fear at the fulfillment of this chapter, there would be no need for the reassurance and instruction. It is indicative of the fact that Yahweh's people will see themselves absolutely helpless, and they will appear helpless unto all others. Then they will receive deliverance from the Yahweh, or from the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, and all will behold him. If the Yahshua's people are approaching the time when they must either confederate or sacrifice their lives, they must be developing that faith in the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, which will cause them to believe that in those days shall men seek the death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Revelation 9:6. Isaiah 8:14. And he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of the stumbling, and for a rock of the offering, and to both the houses of the Israel, for a gin and for a snare, unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem. For a sanctuary is a place of the refuge. Besides being a place of the refuge for the Yahshua's faithful one, he is also to be a rock of the offering unto both the houses of Israel, Judah and Israel, and a gin and a snare unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the ruling city of Judah. From this it is plain that through this confederacy, Yahshua is to be a gin and a snare unto the antitypical Judah. Isaiah 8:15. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. This prophecy declares that the confederacy will be a snare, a trap, and that many will fall and be taken in it. It will be a fearful trap and will separate Yahweh's people. Thus is Yahshua going to test all his people and let them reveal just how much faith each of them has. And the faith of this warning, we must make the necessary preparation so that we will not fall into the snare. For Yahweh has clearly forewarned his people so that they will not be taken back with surprise. In the Isaiah 24, we are told that there would be a shaking as of an olive tree, and that few men would be left. For the confederacy that we are studying this afternoon commences before the loud cry, and this is where we're at right now, and before the slaughter of Ezekiel 9, it is not the image of the beast, for this association precedes the image of the beast, and the confederacy is formed when the nations are girding themselves for the war. Put another way, for the confederacy will commence after the sealing, and perhaps just before the slaughter of the Ezekiel 9. Moreover, it is in the time when the Christian nations are united that the woman Babylon will sit on the seven heads. Revelation 17:9, depicting also the throne of the churches under Babylon. although who are not expecting, let's read that last sentence again. Okay, it says, put another way, for the Confederacy will commence after the sealing of the 144,000, first fruits of the harvest of the Adventist Church, and the 12th parabolic hour, that's what we all are in now, and perhaps just before the slaughter of Ezekiel 9. Moreover, it is in the time when the Christian nations are united that the woman Babylon will sit on the seven heads, and the Adventist Church is the seventh head now. And so now the Babylon is sitting on the seven heads with the Adventist Church as the seventh one. Revelation 17:9 depicting also the union of the churches under or with the Babylon. Okay. All these who are not expecting the Confederacy must instead are expecting next to a reassertion of the Roman Church supremacy, or the Battle of the Armageddon, or something else, are going to fail, or fall into this snare, where it will appear under them harmless, and perhaps even a good thing, but it will be their trap. Isaiah 8:16-18. Bind up the testimony. Seal the law among my disciples. And I will wait upon the Yahshua that hideth his face from the house of Jacob. And I will look for him. Behold, I and the children whom the Yahshua hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel, from the Yahshua of the host, son of Yahweh, which dwelleth in the Mount Zion at the 12th hour, and again Jerusalem. Someone will have faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, Hebrews 10, the New and Living Way, 20 and 21, Hebrews 10, 20-21. For Yahweh does not mean by this that he is keeping his blessing away from Jacob, but it shows that though we cannot see the face, we can witness his power. Isaiah 8:19. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirit, and unto the wizards that feed, and that matter, should not a people seek unto the Yahweh or for the living to the dead? This shows that the world is going spiritualistic, Isaiah 8:20. To the law and to the testimony, to speak not according to his word, because there is no light in them. This does not mean that they are devils, but rather they are in the darkness. When they learn the truth, then they shall speak according unto the law and the testimony of Yahshua. Isaiah 21:22. And they shall pass through it, hardly be dead and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall put themselves and curse their king and their Yahweh, and look upward, and they shall look unto the earth, and behold trouble and darkness, dimness of anguish, and they shall be driven to darkness. Okay, that's the end of 13 symbolic code number 3 and 4. Just a short one. Okay, 12 symbolic code number 1. The chronological order and explanation of some Isaiah chapters. For the sermon selected for this issue of the symbolic code was delivered by the Victory Hall of March the 14th and June the 30th, 1942. And there it says that. Okay, the prayer thought then for that sermon, this sermon, for the message we have to bear is not a message that men lead friends to declare. They are not to seek to cover it, to conceal it, its origin and purpose. Its advocates must be men who will not hold their peace day nor night, as those who have made solemn vows unto Yahweh and who have been commissioned as the messengers of the Yahshua, as the stewards of the mysteries of the grace of the Yahweh. Mysteries of the grace. There's that word, mysteries. We are under and with the obligation for the declaring faithfully of the whole counsel of the Yahweh. We are not to make less prominent the special truth that has separated us from the world and made us what we are, for they are fraught with the eternal interest. For Yahweh has given us light and a regard unto the things that are now taking place in the last remnant of time. And the last remnant of time would be the last hour, the 12th third by the time that we're in now, since 2002. And with the pen and voice, we are to proclaim the everlasting truth unto the world, not in a tame, spiritless way, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and power of the Yahweh. For the mightiest conflicts are involved in the furtherance of the message, and the results of its promulgation are of the moment to both heaven and earth. For the controversy between the two great powers of the good and evil is soon to be ended, but to the time of its close, there will be the continual and sharp contest we should now purpose, as did Daniel and his fellows in Babylon, that we will be true unto the principle, come what may. For the flaming fire furnace heated seven times hotter than it was wont to be heated did not cause these faithful servants of the Yahweh to turn aside from the allegiance to the truth. They stood firm in the time of the trial and were cast into the furnace, and they were not forsaken of the Yahweh. They were not forsaken of the Son of Yahweh Yahshua, for he was the fourth one seen walking in the midst of the fiery furnace with them. He was there on the scene himself to deliver them personally. For the form of the fourth was seen walking with them in the flame, and they came forth not having even the smell of fire upon their garments. Today the world is full of the flatterers and the dissimulars, but the Yahweh forbid that those who claim to be the guardians of the sacred trust shall betray the interest of the Yahweh's cause through the insinuating suggestions and devices of the enemy of all righteousness. There is no time now to range ourselves on the side of the transgressions of the Yahweh's law, to see with their eyes, to hear with their ears, and understand with their perverted senses. We must press together. We must labor to become a unit to the holy and light and pure and character. Let those who profess to be the servants of the living Yahweh no longer bow down to the idol of men's opinion, no longer be slaves to any shameful lust, and no longer bring a polluted offering to the Yahshua, a sin-stained soul. Testimonies, to Ministers, page 470 and 1. Our study for today is taken from the several chapters in Isaiah, particularly chapters 12, 13, and 14. Okay. It says, some of these chapters contain prophecies which are illustrated by the certain experiences of the ancient people and nation, which at some time were to be repeated. We shall now commence our study with only a brief review of what we have already found in chapters 7 and 8. Of Isaiah, because our time is limited and you are all more or less familiar with it. First is mentioned the history of the ancient Israel unsuccessfully confederating with Syria against Judah. For they could not prevail against her, instead both were taken by the Assyria. Then follows the prophecy of the birth of Emmanuel. Since, however, Yahshua was born long after the kings of Israel and Assyria were taken, it is obvious from the verse 16 of chapter 7 that a circumstance was to occur at some time that would be the antitype of the confederacy which took place anciently between Israel and Syria against Judah, and that in this antithetical period both kings represented by Syria and Israel would be taken by a power represented by the Assyria before the Emmanuel would know the difference between good and evil. Since, as has already been pointed out, Yahshua's Emmanuel did not live in the time of such a confederacy. For it must be that not only Israel, Syria, and Assyria are types, but that the Yahshua himself is also a type. For we learn that the Emmanuel, meaning Yahweh the Father with us, could represent only his true followers, the born again apostolic believers. Okay, I'm going to go back and reread this paragraph I just read. Got some correction to make here. Since, as has already been pointed out, that they use the word Christ, I use his correct name, Yahshua, pointed out that Yahshua, parentheses, Emmanuel, did not live in the time of such a confederacy. It must be that not only Israel, Syria, and Assyria are types, but the Yahshua himself is also a type. For we learned that Emmanuel, meaning Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh in the flesh, is with us in the person, could represent only his true followers, the born-again apostolic believers. As Okay. John chapter 3. Nicodemus, born again. Through these scriptures and a historical verse, we learn that the antitype of the Israel and Assyria confederacy took place commencing in the 1st century A.D. When one part of the Christian Israel federated with the pagan Syria against the other Christian Judea, okay, let's do that again. When one part of the spiritual Israel federated with the pagan Syria against the spiritual believers of Judah, but their combined church-state power was broken by the Protestant nation of Syria after Emmanuel, born again, apostolic believers came, but before they had advanced in the truth far enough to know how to choose between the good and the evil, and before the younger antitypical apostolic believers represented by the second son, Mahershala Hasbaz of chapter 8, had progressed enough even to know their father, Yahweh, and their mother, the spiritual Israel of their day. After the Isaiah mentioned that the ancient historical confederacy and then the sign of the Emmanuel, which we have just reviewed and applied unto the experience of the early apostolic church history, Isaiah 8:9 warns against another association of people, saying that this confederacy will likewise surely fail and fall to pieces. And for us, this is the main lesson in these chapters. We are instructed as to what to expect and what to do about it. For the period we are now in is in the antitypical Assyria. For the Assyrian period is about to pass away, and the period of the Babylon to be ushered in. But there is another thing that is to happen between the setting up of the Confederacy of Isaiah 8:9 and the rise of the Babylon. It is the setting up of the Yahweh's kingdom, Daniel 2:44-5, here upon this earth in the days of these kings. Daniel 2, it talks about this ten-toed kingdom in that time, in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now. Yahweh's people are to be taken into their own land and made free. In the outlining of the chapters, we find this order. For the 7th chapter brings the birth of the apostolics and the federation against them. For the 8th chapter brings in the latter-day confederacy of the peoples and nations and the outcome of it. For the 9th and 10th chapters contain a continuation of the antitypical period of the Assyria and her fall. For the 11th chapter brings the setting up of the kingdom of the Yahshua, son of Yahweh. For the 12th chapter expresses the praise of those in Zion in the kingdom. The 13th chapter brings the burden of Babylon. Recently, you recall we studied the 10th chapter of the Isaiah and found that this chapter brings us into the time when the period of the antitypical Assyria is to come to its end, and that's now, in the 12th prophetic hour. We might naturally expect Babylon to fall on us because that period comes after the fall of the Assyria. But that is not correct, for the Assyria's kingdom must also come in its proper time. That is, the child, his people, when they have become mature, born again, apostolic believers, the burden of the Babylon, therefore, is not mentioned until the 13th chapter of Isaiah. Now, we may ask ourselves why the symbolization of the government of Yahweh's kingdom is given in Isaiah 11 is in the form of the rod and the branch and the root. Other figures might have been used that would be just as fitting, but Yahweh chose these. Why? It must be noticed that the 11th chapter starts with the word and showing that it is a continuation of the 10th chapter. Now let us read Isaiah 10, 33 and 4. Behold, the Yahshua of the host shall, the son of Yahweh shall loft the bow with the Torah, and the high ones of the statues shall be hewn down, and the hardy shall be humble, and he shall cut down the thickest of the forest with the iron, and Lebanon shall fall by a mighty one. Isaiah 11:1. And there shall come forth a rod out of a stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. For the people are illustrated as a tree, the Yahshua is first to take with the people, clean the land, and then a branch shall stand. In other words, one seed is to be taken out completely, and a new seed is to stand in its place. The land of our father's Palestine then will be clean from all wicked and wickedness, and Yahshua's people will be there with the Yahshua's principles and influence ruling over them. You see then that these chapters are arranged in their correct order and put in order. No, and put in other terms. It can be said that when the association of Isaiah 8 is urged, the leopard-like beast of Revelation 13 is about to pass off, and the other period represented by the scarlet-colored beast of Revelation 17 is about to come on the stage of the action. With the fall of the Assyria, the land of promise is also prepared for the Yahweh's people to come and there set up a place for those who are to be called out of the Babylon to come where there are neither sin nor sinners. Those are Yahweh's plan. Or those are Yahshua, the son of Yahweh's plan. For the rest of chapter 11 describes the condition of Yahweh's kingdom and the way his people are brought there. And continuing on with the praise of the righteous and the kingdom, chapter 12 commences with the word, and let us read through this chapter and make a few comments as we proceed. Isaiah 12:1. And in that day thou shalt say, O Yahshua, I will praise thee, though thou wast angry with me. Thine anger is turned away, and thou comfortest me. And the church purified, thou surest kind of described in the preceding chapter. Yahweh's people will praise him, though he had been angry with them. When was he angry with them? When he had to use the Gentiles, nations, to disperse them because of their rebellious and idolatrous ways. When they are brought back into the kingdom and are comforted, then they will understand of Yahshua's dealing and will praise him for it. Isaiah 12:2, behold, Yahshua is my salvation, son of Yahweh. I will trust and not be afraid, for Yahshua is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation. This is the testimony Yahweh's people will bear in his kingdom. Isaiah 12:2. Therefore, with the joy shall he draw water out of the wells of the salvation. Now the Yahshua speaks when Yahweh's people are safely and peacefully situated in the land of promise, when they bear their testimony of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, and trust in the Yahshua, then the Yahshua says that they with the joy shall draw water, truth, out of the wells of salvation, Isaiah 12:4. And in that day shall ye say, praise the Yahshua, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted. For the henceforth will do this very thing when they go unto all the nations, Isaiah 12:5. Sing unto the Yahshua, for he hath done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. All the earth is to know of the Yahshua's excellent things. Isaiah 12:6. Cry out and shout thou in the heavens of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee. And that's Yahshua, the Holy One, the Son of Yahweh. For the henceforth will thou stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb, will cry out and shout for joy. How plain it is that Yahshua is about to do a great thing in the earth that all will know about. Before this message came, we were unable to place all of these events. But now clearly they are now. We already learned that with the fall of the Assyria, Yahweh sets up his kingdom. And then Babylon comes on the stage of the action. Therefore, the burden of the Babylon is mentioned in the next chapter, which we shall now study, Isaiah 13:1-2. For the burden of the Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, did see, lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain, exalt the voice unto them, shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. And the presenting of the burden of Babylon, Yahweh's first commission, his own people to lift up the banner, meaning that they are to make known what they have. They are to exalt the voice or message by letting it do for them what it ought to do. For Yahweh's people, the 144,000, are to do this for those in Babylon who will constitute the great multitude of the Revelation 7:9. That they may go into the gates of the nobles. For the Bible declares that it is at the Mount Zion where the nobles will be. Gates and nobles would indicate territory and rulers, showing that Yahweh's kingdom at that time is in the existence, and it is that the Yahshua's kingdom, the son of Yahweh, at that time is into existence, and it is this kingdom that the sincere will go when they leave Babylon, the world in the time of the image of the beast, Isaiah 13:3. I have commanded my sanctified one. I have also called my mighty ones from mine anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. Two groups are here mentioned. Number one, the sanctified one, his sanctified ministry, and number two, his mighty ones, the unfallen angelic. In other words, he is here telling us that he is recruiting his purified church and his anger for his anger. Isaiah 13:4. For the noise of a multitude in the mountain, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of the nations, gathered together, for Yahshua the host mushes the host of the battle. Joel, speaking of this event, says that the heathen will be brought to the valley of Jehoshaphat, where Yahshua is afterwards to judge them. When this happens, it is the great day of the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, Isaiah 13:5. They came from a far country, from the end of the heaven, even unto the Yahshua and the weapons of his indignation, to destroy the whole land. The Yahshua also come. We have seen in these first 5 verses of this chapter 13 the description of the Yahweh's army, which is to destroy the whole land, Isaiah 13:6. How are you? For the day of the Yahshua is at hand. This shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. For the day of the Yahshua is at hand, and the Yahshua is telling you and me that how, even now because of it, people can know only what they are told. Therefore, the command comes to howl, for the certain destruction is coming. It is at hand. Isaiah 13:7-8. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain, as a woman that travaileth shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as flame. A great and sudden surprise is coming to the nation. And all who are unbelievers shall faint, for the great day of Yahshua shall suddenly bring trouble and destruction that they are not expecting. Isaiah 13:9. Behold, the day of the Yahshua cometh, cruel, both with the wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate. And that's going on right now in Israel. And he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the day of Yahshua is at hand to lay the land desolate and to destroy sinners out of it. Isaiah 13:10. For the stars of the heaven and the constellation thereof shall not give their light. For the sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. For this verse gives the signs that are to precede the final great day of the Yahshua, Isaiah 13:11-12. And I will punish the world for their evil, and their wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogance to see of the proud to see, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more of the precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. At this time, Yahweh's people will be without guile and perfect in his sight, and therefore more precious than fine gold. Isaiah 13:13-14. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall be moved out of her place, and the wrath of Yahshua the herd, and in the day of his fierce anger, and it shall be as a chased roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up. They shall every man turn to his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Every man turning to his own people and fleeing into his own land does not mean that they will migrate to their native land. It just shows a separation in which every man must choose whether he will go to the land of the righteous and be with the righteous people, or whether he will choose to dwell in Babylon, where according unto Zephaniah 5, all wickedness is to be carried. Isaiah 13:15. Everyone that is found shall be thrust through, and everyone that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. It will indeed be a cruel day for those in Babylon. Isaiah 13:16. Their children also shall be dashed into pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. For this is the work of the wicked men, and happens when finally the 10 horns of the Revelation 17:16 shall destroy Babylon the great. Isaiah 13:17. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, there shall not be light in it. What happens to the ancient Babylon is a type of what is to happen to modern Babylon. The horns of the heathen nations will destroy her. Her gold and silver will be of no consequence to them. Isaiah 13:18-19. Their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children, and Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees, excellency, shall be as when the Yahweh overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Babylon will never rise again. Isaiah 13:20. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian fish tent there, neither shall the shepherd make their pole there. If Babylon, the woman on the beast of Revelation 17, is to extend over much of the earth, and if her power is to be left with no inhabitant, they would suggest the period of the millennium. It is true that when the millennium begins, the whole world goes down, but that is not in the period of Babylon. The millennium comes after the falling of the plagues, the wrath of Yahweh. The verse we are now studying is talking about Babylon. The ancient capital city of Babylon fell in the time, and is not in the existence today. Therefore, in the Antitype, whatever modern Babylon is, her capital city is likewise to come down. Isaiah 13:21-22. But the wild beasts of the desert shall be there, and their houses shall be full of the doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and sad dogs shall dance there, and the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. Elsewhere in the message, it teaches that Babylon will rule for 1 hour, and this verse says that her time will not be prolonged. Well, that's the hour we're in right now. We have come unto the end of the 13th chapter, and the next verse starts with the word for, indicating that it is a continuation of the 13th chapter. This brings in verse 13, our contact at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive to hear this message and more. We're going to close now with a song.